does have a PhD.
Oh.
Oh, there
okay.
we go.
Okay, Senate Committee on Human Services and Rural Health will be called to order. Thank you and welcome for being welcome for this very exciting meeting. It'll be part two of the other health service. No, it won't. Okay, we need a motion.
Open your organizational.
Okay, we're going to open the organizational meeting.
Oh, you're going to jump right into this.
Yeah, we're going to jump right into
it. We're not going to discuss it at all. All right, Chair. Chair Morissette,
yes.
I move to adopt the proposed committee rules dated February 1st, 2010.
Oh, yours are the first, yeah. Mine are the second.
That's okay.
Okay.
Either one. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Okay.
Well, let's do the ones that are
Senator,
second.
Okay. Telfer moved to adopt the proposed rules dated February 2nd, 2010. Discussion. Is there any, no discussion, any disagreement? So ordered. Okay. Today we're going to have an informational hearing on a couple of issues and a public hearing and possible work session on SCR 21. I don't think we're going to have the work session today, but we will discuss the issue and we have people here.
I do have
yeah.
people here.
Okay. Would you like to do that first?
Sure. Whatever's your pleasure.
Well, if you have people.
There are people here. Yes.
Okay. Why don't we do that?
Okay.
And so we will open the public hearing on SCR 21. You want to tell us about SCR 21?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, SCR 21 commends Dr. James K. Lace for his health care services to children both locally and internationally. This Senate concurrent resolution was introduced by Senator Winters.
Now, is there an amendment?
There is.
There will be an amendment.
There will be.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then we have a couple of people who have signed up in addition to Senator Winters.
Okay. Would you like them to come up? Okay. Lorraine Duncan, Duncan and Joe Bryson, would you please come up, please? Senator Winters.
Thank you, Chair Morissette. For the record, members of the committee, my name is Jackie Winters, State Senator of District 10, and I'm really honored to be here today to present you with this resolution honoring Dr. Lace, Dr. Jim Lace. I've had the opportunity to work with Dr. Lace on a number of projects in my community, and in meeting he's an individual that it's very hard not to recognize because he's really super super tall, and he commands when you go into his presence that he has this way of getting you convinced to help him with his endeavor. Dr. Lace is a pediatrician here in Salem. Extremely committed to serving the children not only in this community but in the state of Oregon. He was very much involved with helping us and assisting us with the Healthy Children's Program and the legislation that we passed last session. I've gotten to know him on a very personal basis because of his work in Africa. Dr. Lace went to Africa to climb Mount Kilimanjaro. Came away from that experience after he learned from two women whose husband was taking him on the tour to Mount Kilimanjaro that there was this huge need to take care of children who were orphaned as a result of HIV/AIDS. So what started as meeting two individuals who were begging for any resources that they could get on the street now has turned into 30 orphanages in Tanzania. I had the opportunity to go visit three of those facilities and also to assist Dr. Lace in raising funds for water, which is a commodity that is so necessary and needed there. And I can't tell you, I get emotional just thinking about the work that has been done there and the number of children and families that he is working and helping to bring health care needs to and to make sure they're fed and clothed and taken care of. While at the same time, he has an outstanding practice here in the state of Oregon. So children to him are not just the children that he sees in our community, nor the children that he is working on behalf of statewide in Oregon, but abroad too. I talked to him the other day, and we think that he probably may have to go to Haiti. And if he does, if he's called, he'll go. And as you read the concurrent resolution, you will also note what I know, that he's an incredible human being who has given an awful lot to this state and internationally to assure the well-being of children in the world. So I know there's others here who would like to talk about Dr. Lace and the reason that we're honoring him. And also I will note that there will be an amendment because he just received another award.
Hi. Thank you. Go ahead.
Chair Morissette, members of the committee, my name is Joe Bryson. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Medical Association, and it gives me great pleasure to come here to Salem to testify in support of your recognition of my friend and colleague, Dr. James Lace. Dr. Lace was going to try to make it here today, but he is caring for his little patients. Many of you may recognize Jim as a tireless advocate and activist on behalf of Oregon's physicians, patients, and most importantly, its children. Dr. Lace was one of the leaders in the fight for the expansion of the Oregon Health Plan in the last two legislative sessions. As a pediatrician in Salem with a practice where the majority of his patients are covered by Medicaid, he knows all too well the challenges faced by families whose access to affordability, quality health care, and is even stretched tight in the best of times. But beyond our borders, Dr. Lace has devoted himself to the last 9 years to working with children in Africa whose situation is even more critical. Dr. Lace became aware of and adopted an orphanage in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania in 2001. Located in the poorest part of the city, Yatim was serving 100 orphans in only 6 rooms without adequate water supply, a kitchen, or toilet facilities. Now, thanks to the profound efforts of Dr. Lace and the local community, Yatim has moved to a 16-acre farm and has grown to house 140 children in 4 dormitories. He continues to regularly provide to and care for the children, and his charitable efforts grow each year. More recent efforts now include finding funds to help source clean water for a village in Lagasti, beginning a farm site near Arusha, and seeking funding for a pilot program to provide vocational training for children and medical care for the children of Arusha. I invite you to visit the website orphansfoundationfund.org to learn more about the range of projects Dr. Lace's foundation has undertaken. As chair of the OMA Legislative Committee for several years, Dr. Lace has worked to provide guidance and support to the entire House of Medicine throughout the legislative process. He personally has reviewed thousands of bills over his tenure as chair and has made an emphasis on children's health and public health. Dr. Lace is the face of the OMA during the legislative process and finds time in his extremely busy practice to come to the Capitol and lobby for the important issues that face Oregon physicians and the patients they serve. His colleagues in the medical community have on multiple occasions acknowledged and praised Dr. Lace for his achievements. He was recognized with the OMA Dr. Citizen of the Year Award in 2006, and this year, as your resolution notes, he was recognized with the Marion Polk County Medical Society's Presidential Achievement Award. Those of us that get to work with Dr. Lace on a regular basis are awestruck by his dedication to others and his amazing endurance in pursuit of so many causes other than his own. I want to thank you, Senator Winters, for sponsoring this resolution, and I want to thank the committee and the Oregon legislature for acknowledging the amazing work of Dr. Jim Lace. It's hard to think of someone more deserving of such an honor.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Chair Morissette and committee members, my name is Lorraine Duncan. I'm the immunization program manager for the Office of Family Health for Oregon Public Health Division. And I'd like to say that Dr. Jim Lace is an important partner and an advocate for the immunization program and has been so for 30 years. The Oregon Public Health Division approves and supports this accommodation. He's an invaluable partner for the Oregon Immunization Program. So I often think of what does success mean, and I turn to a quote from Will Rogers, which said, if you want to be successful, know what you're doing, love what you're doing, and believe in what you're doing. Dr. Lace is successful in promoting the safe and effectiveness of a vaccine. He knows what he's doing, he loves what he's doing, and he really believes in what he's doing. He's helped us reduce the vaccine-preventable disease rates in Oregon to their all-time low, helped us raise the immunization levels to an all-time high, and has worked on public and private partnerships, including our statewide immunization registry. I'd like to congratulate Dr. Lace on an incredible job, and I'd like to thank you very much for recognizing him. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. You do have an amendment to the bill that we will hear either on Thursday or Tuesday of next week. And if Dr. Lace could be here, that would be nice, if he's available. Okay, any
and
questions, comments? Yeah.
I was just asking if you had any questions. I'm sure that any of us would be happy to answer them.
Okay. Yes.
Senator, I don't have a question, but I, too, want to thank Senator Withers. I think it's really important for legislators to bring these people that all of us have not had an opportunity to know some of the work that they're doing in the state of Oregon and elsewhere to the forefront and to recognize them and thank both of you as well for being here today.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Good. Thank you. Okay, we will close the public hearing on SJR 21, SCR, and we will, we're going to have an informational hearing, and we will open the informational hearing on the status of seniors and people with disabilities. And James Taves, would you come up, please? Okay, we can do that. Let's see, James. Oh, Nicole, then, did you want to come up? Where are you? Okay.
Nicole on crutches.
Oh, Nicole.
Yeah.
Are you all right? Goodness gracious.
I know.
Mr. Taves.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, James Taves from the Department of Human Services, Seniors and People with Disabilities Division. It's good to be back in front of your committee. I was asked to give a brief status report on senior and disability programs, and so I've just handed out some very brief talking points that we'd be happy to elaborate and provide additional either oral or written information if the committee pleases. But I thought I'd sort of summarize the critical issues that face us right now, including some of our recent successes as well. The Oregon economy, as well as the national economy, has taken its toll on lots of programs, including long-term care. So we're seeing increasing costs in our budget that create potential problems in our budget for yet this biennium. It includes a combination of growing caseloads in our in-home program and foster care. It includes decreased contributions from clients themselves, which makes up part of the other funds that come into the department. We have increased estate recoveries, which is not unexpected in a poor economic climate. We have home care workers that are enrolling in health care insurance at an unprecedented rate. Those enrollments were pretty stable over 4 years, and now I'm sure as other family members lose insurance, we have hundreds of new people signed up for that health insurance benefit that has increased our costs. We had major increases in Part A and Part B premiums for which the state pays co-pays for poor seniors. So all of those are contributing to potential budget woes for the Senior and Disabilities Division that all are potentially part of the rebalance mix that was presented to the Ways and Means Committee in December and will be dealt with during this session. There is potential good news on the horizon in the President's budget, and I think as part of the jobs bill in Congress, they're talking about extending the enhanced federal match rate. In this last biennium, the federal match rate as part of the federal stimulus bill actually increased Oregon's match rate from 40-60 to 30-70, the federal government contributing 70%, the state paying 30%. For senior and disability programs alone, that brought in almost $233 million, of which the general fund was then backed out, which helped offset some of the other reductions. So it really helped us out in this current biennium. But under the current stimulus law, that ends in January of 2011. We've accounted for that for the whole biennium. But if Congress now extends that for 6 months, that would be additional revenue that could help the department and SPD meet any shortfalls we would have yet this biennium. But that's uncertain at this point, but that is certainly a potential out there. We will begin in the next couple of months building our budget for next biennium for 2011 through 13. That's, of course, where our really major concern is, because assuming stimulus, the federal match enhancement, does not continue, then the department overall and SPD in particular faces a significant shortfall in just meeting our base budget. And we predict it could be anywhere from $300 to $400 million, perhaps even more, that we will be short in building our base budget, our continuing service level for the following biennium. So that will certainly pose a huge issue for us and for the legislature when you come back into session in 2011. Some of the good news, Medicaid access, which is an issue that this committee paid a lot of attention to in the past 3 or 4 years, because our Medicaid access in community-based care, foster care, assisted living, residential care was all declining at a worrisome rate. This committee spent a lot of time with your House counterparts in helping pass an interim rate increase in the supplemental session 2 years ago. That, I think, combined with also the economy and private pay admissions being down, people not being able to sell their houses and enter long-term care, I think has all kind of been in the mix of stabilizing our Medicaid access. So we don't actually have declining access now. We have stable access, and in some cases, we even have brand-new providers coming into the Medicaid program that weren't there before. So for us, that's very good news, because if we lose access, then we have no alternatives for poor seniors and people with disabilities. We issue, I think, based on a bill that this committee passed several years ago, we issue a quarterly report on Medicaid access across our entire long-term care system, and I think we'll be providing that within the next couple months again.
James, could you talk about the alternative to assisted living and residential care that we would face without adequate access if people drop out in terms of nursing home requirements and so on?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the issue has always been, because Oregon, again, has one of the best balanced long-term care systems in the country, and of our senior and physically disabled population, we serve about 15% of the eligible population in nursing homes, and the balance either in in-home programs or community-based care. So if those alternatives start to evaporate, then people are either forced to stay at home with inadequate supports or go to the other end of the spectrum into nursing home care at a much higher cost. So keeping that relative balance has always been very critical, which is why I think this committee and the legislature overall addressed that several years ago when that balance started to erode. But at least for now, it is stabilized, and that's good news, because otherwise people simply have no alternatives.
And what would it cost the state to support the nursing home?
Mr. Chairman, the rate differential is still anywhere. Our community rates usually are between $1,000 to $2,500, and correspondingly the nursing home rates I think now are $6,200 a month, so it's double or sometimes triple the costs of what the care would be on the community side.
And we have obligations.
Mr. Chairman, we certainly have obligations, and again, anyone eligible for long-term care is eligible for nursing home care. That's a federal mandate. If a state takes $1 of Medicaid, it's obligated to provide that benefit. So if we don't provide community alternatives, those mandates then push out into more expensive forms of care.
And that could come out of money that would otherwise go to education and public safety and other programs.
Mr. Chairman, the legislature would have to
Well,
make that
I know
decision.
That, but what I'm saying is that we do have some obligations, and if we don't do it the smart way, we're going to have to do it the expensive way.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so I think that we have to know that. And I think that as we move along toward the end of this biennium, that you'll need to make sure that the congressional delegation understands, you know, what's going to happen in Oregon, and hope that we do get an extension, because if we don't, then, you know, we're in big trouble.
Yeah.
And I don't know that the tax receipts are going to be that high on February 15th this year, and I don't know, you know, our revenue forecast is probably not going to be that good.
Well, Mr. Chairman, even if Oregon's economy rebounds, I think the shortfall we potentially face as all the federal stimulus money goes away even an economic rebound would not make up that difference. So we still face, and I think it's good news that they've at least proposed at this point a continuation of the federal match difference. As unpopular as stimulus itself might get, there is a historical precedent for adjusting match rates during poor economic times. It has nothing to do with stimulus and the politics around stimulus. Senator Winters will probably remember in 2003, and I think in between 2001 and 2003, the federal government increased the match rate for states like Oregon that had particularly high unemployment. And so there is some history of that hopefully will promote a continuation of that after a mere extension. And that would help. That would be bread and butter for us, but we can't be assured of that. So we just don't know.
Senator Telfer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Has SPD been impacted by the Transformation Roadmap implementation of any of that? And if not, will it be? Is it part of the plan?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we have a whole transformation team that's been working on a whole series of projects, and I think our estimated savings on that roadmap right now stands at about $20 million, and we're still continuing. And I'd be happy to provide you with the details of that. But we've thrown everything we can at saving and cutting, particularly making up for our staffing shortages, both in the field and elsewhere.
You'll get that information to our committee chair. Right?
Absolutely.
Follow up.
Yeah. And I would appreciate that because, you know, I think the Transformation Roadmap study was more not just saving dollars because, you know, frankly, some of those dollars that are being saved aren't getting back into the community, aren't getting back to the general fund or whatever. So I would appreciate that. But you say you've saved $20 million or implementing to save 20, but that's a seven-year plan, according to Dr. Goldberg. So you should be recognizing some savings in the future.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, that's the amount of savings we're tracking to date.
To date, right.
Yeah. And so we have more projected out into the future as well. But you're absolutely right. A lot of what we've worked on the roadmap are not dollar savings per se, but We have a staff freeze that we've been in SPD alone under for about a year and a half. Our staffing workload ratios in the field are about 20% under what we calculate should actually be the workload standard. And so anything we can do to short-circuit typical workloads and be able to still keep pace with the existing staff, I mean, that really becomes even more important in some cases than just mere dollar and cent savings. It's still doing the work we're required by state and federal law with the staff we have.
Other comments?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, going down through the balance of this list, in developmental disability programs, I think we've made some real achievements. Eastern Oregon Training Center closed in October of this last year. That ends 100 years of institutionalization of people with developmental disabilities in Oregon. We join a handful of states that now has no institutions for people with developmental disabilities. Fairview, of course, closed in 2000, and unlike other states that don't have institutions, we also don't send people to institutions out of state. So I think that's a real achievement on our developmental disability side. And we've completed the rollout of the Staley Agreement, which was to finally ease long, long waiting lists. And so now when a person with disabilities, an adult with disabilities, present themselves for service, they don't go on a waiting list, but within 60 to 90 days, we provide some level of support for them. So that's been good news, too. On the back page, on number 6, we're still continuing a lot of planning for the non-Medicaid population. We've talked about this many times in our different long-range planning presentations. And really looking at what are becoming known nationally as ADRC services, Aging and Disability Resource Centers, that have been seeded in every part of the country. Oregon currently has 2 grants for strategic planning in this area. There was a significant amount of funding included in the health reform bill, which may or may not go anywhere at this point in Congress. But the whole goal is to provide supports, including support to natural caregivers, chronic disease management, falls prevention, OPI-like in-home services for the pre-Medicaid population, those things that will absolutely keep people safe at home, independent, before they spend down and then go on the full public benefit side. I was just recently in a meeting in D.C. with the Office of Budget and Management out of the White House, the Administration on Aging, and the Centers on Medicaid and Medicare, and everyone was pointing at us, the state, saying you must come up with evidence-based programs in which you can predict hard dollar savings or how you're going to bend that Medicaid-Medicare curve by healthy aging and other kind of strategies. And they can't be mere pilot projects anymore. You have to begin to say how you're going to take this to scale and really provide meaningful support for people long before they spend down and need public assistance. So I think that's gaining some traction, and we were pushed very hard because, as you know, the president's budget proposes caps on discretionary spending, but the entitlements are still not capped or restrained. And unless we, on the fund side, which are now discretionary programs in prevention and other areas, unless we can prove that will actually change the funding formulas on the entitlement side, I don't think we're going to make much progress. But those approaches are getting high visibility, but the federal funding still isn't there, and it's still our hope eventually that we could get federal match for OPI and other things for the non-Medicaid part of our service system.
Now, Lane County received one of the grants.
Correct.
For that. Was there 2 grants, or was there another?
Mr. Chairman, there was a second grant as well that I think they're going to talk about it yet this afternoon. That includes the Mid Valley and in Multnomah County, and we've gotten a couple other. We're about to get a chronic disease management grant. We got a grant on dementia, and so we've applied for a lot of grants and suddenly got them all, which is kind of challenging to manage all those. But we have 2 Aging and Disability Resource Center grants with the intent of mapping out within 5 years how we will take those programs statewide.
Okay. Anecdotal information about senior connections in Lane County. I was talking to a car mechanic who was working on my car, whose father had dementia, and they were trying to figure out how to do the home care and so on and so forth. And so I put them in, I call a Senior Connections, which I am on the board of. There are seven people in Lane County who have an outreach program for any senior, and he was contacted, and very thankful for the advice that he got in terms of how to deal with that. And now what kind of information are you looking or are the feds looking for success rates in these programs?
Mr. Chairman, they're based on all the Aging and Disability Resource Centers out there and a whole series of grants that have already covered pilot programs in different states. Both actuaries from the Centers on Medicaid and Medicare and some private actuaries, the Lewin Group and some of the other national consulting groups, have actually started to score different approaches, and it was part of including funding for some of this in the health reform bill, which the Congressional Budget Office obviously has to score. So they've actually come up with a series of methodologies on predicting savings. If you penetrate X percentage of the population with chronic disease management, then you can predict the following savings in Medicaid and Medicare, likewise with falls prevention and others. So there are some developing formulas that we hope in our planning to take and just make them organ-specific. So as we bring any proposals forward, we could say, if you did this on the front end, then we could actually achieve a reduced demand on the back end.
So Lane Council of Governments, which administers the program, would probably have the guidelines and the criteria and so on for as part of the grant, I imagine, in terms of...
Correct. And Mr. Chairman, they're focusing a lot on hospital discharge planning. That was one of the twists there, and looking at a methodology about how you track intensively people who leave hospitals to make sure that they get all the in-home and the health care and the medication management, all the things that often, if they aren't followed through, then result in a rehospitalization or an admission to an expensive care facility. So that's one variation of those grants.
Good. Thank you.
And finally, the last thing I'll say is we're also continuing to work on developing some new... I'm sorry.
Just a quick question. Are any of the grants that are out there, and since you talked about dementia, will focus on educating the general public of how to recognize where they have a family member and then where they go to for service?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Winters, all of these projects are aimed, by the time we're done, at a single resource statewide and locally, toll-free numbers, websites, and hotlines in every community where anything that a senior or a person with disability needs, whether they're Medicaid eligible or not, can go, and it's absolutely seamless to say, here are agencies that can help, here's benefits counseling, here's how you sign up for Social Security, here's how you deal with Medicaid and Medicare. If you need a referral, you're Medicaid eligible, here's where your eligibility is done, here's a referral to the appropriate, least costly setting that will meet your needs. It is our goal to wrap all of that eventually within a matter of years to pointing towards a single door. Senators often talked about the new front door, and that was a concept that we originally called this several years ago, but that is the goal, and then to do broad public education that anybody, anywhere, can access that information almost instantaneously. And I think what is happening in the planning at the federal level is, and why they're starting to look at requirements that would cross state lines, is so much of what we do for our parents or loved ones that have care needs is done from out of state, or your mom or dad lives in the East Coast and suddenly they have care needs and you don't have a clue where to even start. And so we're hoping to standardize that kind of information link nationwide so anybody could go anywhere. You could call a local area and say, my father lives in Western New York, where do I go for help? And be linked almost instantaneously with live voices and people in that area. So that's... it's a bit of a fantasy still, but that is the goal.
Well, it's a reality in Lane County because that's exactly what Senior Connections is all about. And I think Ted Stevens, who was involved in the new front door when he was the director of Lane County Senior Disabled Services, implemented that program, and that's exactly what they do. They will deal with any senior concerning any problem that they have. And there are six or seven people that are in different parts of the county, and it's a great program.
Then, just a follow-up on that, then the problem that we saw with jurisdictional issues, particularly within our own state, if you have an individual in Marion County who has to go someplace in Yamhill County, who ends up in Deschutes County, that, you know, the system will be designed in such a way that you won't end up with three bodies trying to engineer this one individual. And, you know, it's my hope that if we talk about one door, that we're able to fix that whole issue of who then becomes responsible for making sure that the individual gets the service or services that they need without having other barriers.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Winters, I can't imagine you're referring to a real-life story.
Yeah, you know I am.
Senator Verger.
Yes, I'm curious about access by phone that people can have. You commented that given this number that they would get a real-life person. If I were to call your department in trying to get help or from any agency or any department within your agency, how many automated things do I have to go through? If I want this, I punch two. If I want that, I will punch four. If I then I punch four, and then I get another menu. How much of that do I have to go through?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, we have not designed. We're in the design stages, but this is not rolled out. I mean, at this point in time, it still is very confusing for seniors and people with disabilities on the ground. They can go to a AAA or one of our state offices if they're Medicaid eligible, get their eligibility done, and get pretty good advice about their Medicaid options. If they're not Medicaid eligible, other than some of the pilot grants, we have a very poor system of providing live information on the ground to people at this point, which is the whole purpose of this planning. What we're trying to look at is numbers and websites that hook you up, what we call a warm transfer, almost immediately, so you don't go through multiple calls or lines to try to get to a live voice, but literally on the first call you can get extensive advice at that time and then a warm transfer to a live voice and a person that you can actually even meet with in your local area to help you go through that. That is our goal. We're not at that point at this point in time. And quite frankly, our local offices in the state, we sort of jerry-rig a lot of stuff. I mean, there's not a week that goes by where someone out of state doesn't call our office just looking for help. There is not an automatic line that they go to, so they end up coming into our office, transferred to someone. Then we call Multnomah County or a local county and try to hook them up. So it is not designed at this point to be what you're really asking for, and that's in part the whole reason for the planning that we're doing now.
I would suggest that you call, I'll give you who to call in Florence, which is in your district, because there is a senior connection person in Florence, but I'm sorry, go ahead, follow up.
I think it's one thing if I'm going to order a blanket from JCPenney and they put me on the phone and say, we really appreciate your call, please stay on the line, the next available person will get to you, and then you're 20 minutes later holding a long-distance line. But it's a whole different thing when people are trying to get help and they have some disability and they have also a more complicated life in what they're eligible for and what they're not eligible for. So I would just hope, and I just want to extend this to you at this time, that something is done that makes it a little bit easier for people to actually communicate and to be able to get some kind of help.
Okay. That's absolutely our intent. Comments. So with that, Mr. Chairman, that's my brief update.
Okay. If the election had come out differently, you would have something different to talk about today, right?
Mr. Chairman, we prepared a reduction
scenario
list that, I mean, those are still reductions that are pending, you know, other issues okay. that may occur as well.
Yeah,
so
we're not out of the woods. Okay. Other comments, questions to Mr. Taves?
But Mr. Chair, can I make a comment? Because I left Mr. Taves hanging that it was a real live case. And I do want to thank Mr. Taves and his staff because it was multiple jurisdictions. And it was where you had state and AAA and others involved, and your staff did a very good job. It still begs the question, however, that somehow we need to look at those systems and see how those systems can come together to respond, because not everyone would have the opportunity or know to call your office, and that gets at the question that Senator Verger raised, that I think it's important that when we look at John Q. Public, that they have the avenue to be able to get response and are able to cross over our very system. But I do want to thank your office for their assistance in that particular, in the instance that we were talking about. They did a very good job. Thanks.
Nicole.
Senator Morissette, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Nicole Parmentier Armstrong. I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Association of Area Agencies on Aging and Disabilities, better known as O4AD. And Mr. Taves covered most of the things that we were going to talk about. Based on the outcome of the election, we're delighted that Oregon Project Independence remains intact from the legislatively approved budget. Our programs are intact at the moment, and capacity remains reasonably intact, but we're always nervous about that. As James pointed out, there are a lot of things on the horizon right now. The area agencies are involved very closely with what's happening in the Aging Disability Resource Center grants. And we are excited about that, but we're also concerned because it's going to require some state investment somewhere down the road. The things that Senator Verger and Senator Winters are speaking of are desperately needed, and we hear about that. Our case managers hear about these issues all the time. However, we don't have the system in Oregon to meet those needs. And what's interesting to us is that other states have taken the Oregon model that was created back in the day, have taken it, and now are doing it better because they're addressing the pre-Medicaid issues. They're addressing prevention, intervention, streamlined communication, easier access. How do you do all of this in a way to help people maximize their resources, give them more choices up front, delay entrance into higher cost care for as long as possible, utilize their family or natural supports better? But all of those things are going to take help from the federal government and from the state government as well. One area, too, that we are looking at is adult foster care in rural areas. While there has been some great advances in rates, we see that in the rural areas, there still is a need for increased capacity. There also continues to be the need for providing the resources to make sure that we can monitor these new types of community-based care or new providers that are coming online to make sure that their care remains safe, that there's technical assistance and quality in everything that they do, because we want to make sure that our clients are safe and being taken care of to the best of our ability. Workload remains an issue for us at the field level. Our case managers continue to have very, very high caseloads, our eligibility caseloads. All of those pieces are very hard to manage, and we are concerned that as a case manager becomes more and more overloaded, the ability and the time that they have to really look at the comprehensive choices, going into the community or home care or things, you just don't have as much time as you need to be able to make the best plan possible. And they do their very best and try to make sure that we're able to get them into the lowest cost care, but also one that meets their needs. But the capacity to do that on an individual only goes so far. I think that into the future, we're excited, though, that with these grants, with some of the other things that are going on, it seems like we're at a point where we're able to step back now and look at our system and where we've been, but where we need to go in order to be able to keep this together, to be able to continue to afford it, and to be able to meet our obligations as well as be able to try to create some sort of sustainability, if at all possible, on it into the future as the demographic continues to increase. So with that, thank you.
Questions? Okay, good. Thank you. Lee Gerard, Jeff Hill.
Good Chair Morissette and members of the committee, my name is Lee Gerard, and I'm the Community Services Manager for Multnomah County Aging and Disability Services Division. And both Jeff Hill from Washington County and I are here today to talk about one of the third grants that Seniors and People with Disabilities has, which is called a Community Living Program Grant. This grant builds on the work that the federal government and the state of Oregon are doing to develop aging and disability resource centers, and has a particular focus on looking at populations, private pay, and other non-traditional populations, and helping them to avoid more costly and expensive forms of care, long-term care services, and specifically to look at identifying older adults, and in this case, veterans, who would be at high risk for spend down to Medicaid services, and to provide them with long-term care options, counseling, and to use a single entry access system to do that. I'm going to be talking about specifically about the diversion of older adults that are private pay, and then Jeff is going to talk about the veterans services portion of this particular grant that we're working on.
Good.
Through the Community Living Program Grant, Washington County and Multnomah County are partnering together as both our area agencies on aging and then a wide variety of other partners, which I think would actually help in some ways to model some of the issues that Senator Winters had talked about earlier. We're going to be partnering with the Medicaid staff in both of those counties. That includes AAA Medicaid staff and SPD Medicaid staff. We'll be partnering two different governmental area agencies on aging, and then we'll also be partnering with hospital systems and with our community nonprofits in those communities, including the Independent Living Center that works in our region. The part of the grant that I'm going to talk about is really looking at older adults. Our initial partnership will be with Providence Health Systems, and we'll be looking at and actually building on the work that is happening in Lane County with their Aging and Disability Resource Grant and their hospital diversion activities for Medicaid individuals. And we'll be looking, taking those tools and that experience that they have developed, and looking at how we might be able to apply that to identifying older adults who are currently in being discharged from hospitals and would be at higher risk for both hospital readmission and spend down to Medicaid fairly quickly, and ways that we can identify them quickly and get them more intensive options counseling and access to community services and supports, which they may be actually paying for themselves, that would help them remain as independent as possible in the community. As well as partnering with those hospital partners, we're also going to partner with the staff out of both the Area Agency on Aging in Multnomah County and Seniors and People with Disabilities in Washington County about using the nursing facility private admission assessment system to identify some of those individuals that could also benefit from long-term care options counseling.
And how long have you been doing this?
We are actually in the very, very early stage. It's been like maybe 4 months. So our goal is to actually start piloting this in Multnomah County by the end of the summer, and then probably by early fall in Washington County. Okay. So that's kind of our plan. One of the other key components of this grant is that we are in Multnomah County. We have a what we call a senior helpline, which has live individuals that are answering the phone from 8 to 5, and we actually have live individuals through a contract answering our phone after hours. We're partnering with Washington County to look at how we might regionalize that resource for our two counties to increase access.
I wonder if, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't understand exactly what you're telling me, so I'm going to ask you to be a little bit anecdotal. In other words, there is an older adult who is private pay, goes in the hospital, gets out of the hospital, and goes home. What kind of counseling specifically you're talking about? Why would the Medicaid be drawn down quickly? I think those are just questions that, being outside of your inside baseball thing,
right,
I don't understand.
Chair Morissette and Senator Verger and committee members, that's an excellent question, and I can probably kind of walk you through an example. Probably a good example would be that, let's say there is, a 75-year-old woman who maybe has $60,000 in assets, she has broken a hip. She maybe has family living out of the area. She has some assets, but she doesn't have a lot. And she maybe has other chronic conditions that would put her at higher risk if she isn't getting good, adequate long-term care services. Working with the hospital staff, their hospital discharge staff, or maybe even with the staff that help folks when they go to nursing facilities, we could identify those individuals who would maybe have the most at-risk chronic conditions or acute health conditions that would put them at increased risk, and also have maybe, some assets but lower assets that if for some reason they ended up having to use nursing facility care, they would spend down, maybe within 6 to 9 months to Medicaid services, or if they had to have much more expensive types of services, regardless of the location, that they would spend down very quickly. And this would be a way to, number one, help those folks identify services that help them to be more independent. And ideally, we could be looking at trying to track and see, are there interventions that we can, and supports that we can help people with, so that they can be more independent and utilize their own resources more effectively.
Yes. Thank you very much for that. Having an example really helps. I guess that my experience has been that the hospitals actually have staff that when people leave the hospital, they're very thoroughly instructed about all kinds of special needs, who to go to, and so forth. So is this redundant? Is this something that's not needed?
Senator Verger and committee members, that question is one of the incentives for the hospital staff, the discharge planning staff, and actually for consumers, is hospitals have limited resources themselves. They do an excellent job of identifying and working with those folks in doing the discharge planning. The issue for them a lot of times is that they're not able to necessarily do that intensive follow-up afterwards, after the folks leave the hospitals. There are a variety of partnerships and models that people are trying out to see about extending that relationship. And this would be a way of trying out, we would then work with the hospital to provide the support that they can't provide once the person leaves the hospital. So it's not like RN nursing services. It's more the coaching and making sure that the person has access to the information and doing the problem solving and getting those other types of services that they're going to need once they get out of the hospital.
Mr. Chair, yeah. Should I have one more?
Yeah.
I don't want to discourage you, but I want to be the devil's advocate a little bit here. Is this necessary for government, whether it's county, state, local, to expand what they're already doing, which is to get more people on the payroll, more people that are working in services and so forth? Is that our place? Should we be doing that?
One of the focuses of this particular grant is to actually measure the cost benefit of this type of intervention to see is it really effective, and is it going to be effective for consumers and be cost-effective for us, for government, and for taxpayers. So the idea is that there should be some cost avoidance for, and hopefully reducing the number of folks that end up needing public benefits because they're able to utilize their private benefits more effectively. And the idea of doing something like this with a grant is to see if it does that really happen before we go and actually commit a lot of public resources to doing something like that. So,
How about East Multnomah County? Do you have a representative in Gresham that looks after seniors?
Yes, we do. We actually have in Multnomah County for this particular grant, we are going to partner with what are called our district senior centers, and we have a district senior center in Gresham. It's the agency is the YWCA, and they're actually co-located with our county offices and our staff and our senior meal site.
Okay.
So, and they'll be partnering with us on this.
Well, grant. I'm glad you used the word cost avoidance because I think that's the name of the game. And how can we prevent higher costs by having people have to move into the next level of mm-hmm. care? And even Project Independence will service people who can afford to pay for the services, full pay for the services even. I think that's the name of the game, is to try to keep people out of more expensive state-funded programs. And the group that I belong with, I'm on the chair of the Senior Connections, and we do fundraisers every year to raise money to keep that program going. So it is a lot of it is community-based support on that. And so, any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much, Lee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Hill. I'm the Division Manager for Washington County Disability, Aging, and Veteran Services, and we are also the Area Agency on Aging for Washington County. I'm going to talk about the Veterans Directed Home and Community-Based Care Services Program that was a part of this grant. The Veterans Health Administration is providing the opportunity for state units on aging and area agencies on aging to provide veteran-directed home and community-based care services. The programs, which are consumer-directed and designed to empower veterans of any age at risk of nursing home placement to direct their own care and go into home and community-based services. This grant focuses on both veterans receiving supports from family members and providing care, and is designed to divert or delay veterans from entering nursing facilities and spending down to Medicaid if they can be served in a more community or home-based care setting. As part of this grant, Multnomah and Washington County will develop a two-county single entry point for screening individuals at risk of nursing facility placements and Medicaid spend down. Both agencies' current information and assistance programs screen thousands of people each year, and transitioning to this style, which you indicated you were interested in earlier, will help to consolidate this step within our area. The consumer-directed service model that will be used for veterans will redirect existing federal, state, and local funding for aging services to establish client accounts for consumers and caregivers who choose to direct their own care. Service planning will be done by case managers trained in care planning. Flexible service options, including self-directed care, will be offered as a choice to participating veterans and their caregivers. This includes the option for a client-employed provider from a pre-screened state list of home care workers. The case manager will conduct the assessment, interview, and develop the care plan and provide ongoing monitoring of the program. The community-based services, such as personal care, homemaking, and respite, are purchased for the individual from a pool of available providers. Long-term care options counseling is a key service provided by the Aging and Disability Resource Centers. The intent is to work with individuals of any age having modest assets and but are not eligible for Medicaid to help them choose effective services to address their needs, but also to help them avoid spending down to Medicaid. Helping individuals plan for their future will require group education as well as significant one-on-one staff work with individuals and families. The aim is to work toward helping people make informed decisions for their own unique circumstances. And I'd be willing to answer any questions on that.
Questions? How many veterans do you deal with? What's the...
The veteran population in Washington County is around 37,000, and in Multnomah County is around 48,000. Washington County is currently has an active caseload of around 2,000 veterans. And I'm not sure what Multnomah County's.
We have an active caseload of about 700, 600 to 700 veterans.
And veteran services are somewhat limited, but they're in the metro area. But you advise veterans on all of the services that they're entitled to that they find.
Correct, sir.
Hard to get in.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Both counties are there to work with veterans in filing claims with, say, federal VA for their federal benefits and advising them of both state and local benefits that may be available to them. And they work with the veteran through the entire claims process.
Okay. Are there roadblocks that you... what are some of the problems that veterans are having that you're solving, that you're mm-hmm. helping to solve?
Well, the access to benefits is the main problem. It's a complicated system, and our service officers complete the application paperwork working with the veteran, gather the evidence, and supply it to the federal VA, who actually makes the decision. But it's a very highly regulated system, and moving through that process can be daunting for an individual to figure out on their own. And our benefits counselors are trained to do that for the veteran and work and guide them through and work with the VA in order to get the loan.
We had a hearing earlier today about veterans' access to
mental health,
psychology, psychologist versus psychiatrist, rural Oregon, and so on. That may mm-hmm. not be much of a problem in your area because you have the VA hospital there, right?
It's still a problem in our particular. I mean, because they're not staffed sufficiently to handle the numbers,
okay.
They handle the upper portion of the state. You know, they've divided into catchment areas. But one of the things we've done in our county to help with that is we've developed a program in partnership with Pacific University,
okay.
where their graduate students will meet and counsel with our veterans and their family members regarding post-traumatic stress disorder and other mental health issues.
Okay. Now, that leads to the next question concerning traumatic brain injury, which I'm also on the board of the traumatic brain injury. We've had several bills that deal with it, recognizing it in, say, football players, high school, and so on and so forth. But the Veterans Administration has been rather slow in recognizing the difference between traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress. And is that what are you doing with traumatic brain injury people? How are you dealing with that?
Right. Well, we've trained our staff and met with through different training programs with professionals, and so our own staff will recognize the difference between TBI and post-traumatic stress disorder. And, you know, we refer them to the Veterans Administration, to their hospital system, and through their clinic system to and identify that this is what, you know, we feel that their disability may be, and that's the most we can do at this time with that issue.
Okay. Okay. Yes, Senator Verger.
Yes, Chairman and members of the committee, I think it's unconscionable that we make it so easy, just sign right here if you want to go into the military. But once you've gone and served your country and you need access to benefits, you need a case manager to help you fill out the paperwork to get the benefits. There is absolutely something wrong with that picture. You know, we've done that with a taxation, no offense to my CPA. It's been a full employment program for people to be able to fill out paperwork by our government. And I just want to put that on the record, that I applaud you for trying to help people that are trying to get benefits that are deserving, and that are, in some cases, desperately in need of them. But I do think it is unfortunate that we have allowed it to be that way. So best of luck to you with that part of your grant.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Just to follow up on those lines, I know you can't do much, but we would love to see at the federal level sort of a release and flexibility for access for our veterans into community centers and local clinics and centers, rather than them always having to have this line with the Veterans Affairs.
Yes, we agree with you.
Senator Maurer just walked in the room and he's shaking his head.
Representative Maurer.
Representative.
Representative
Maurer. You've been elevated.
I was just going to go down to ask him, and he shook me off.
Okay. Well, I just thought I would acknowledge him, Representative Maurer. I thank you very much for your testimony, and I think that it's important that we do address the veteran situation and all of its varying aspects and so on, because there are so many complicated issues, and just the difference between traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress in itself is a big issue. And I know that General Caldwell was here last year, and he talked about the helmets, the new helmets that they're making now that will protect people from that. And then we've also discovered that there's a very serious problem in high school sports and college sports and professional sports, and people are beginning to realize that blows to the head are cumulative and can have long-lasting effect, and we're still not dealing with it adequately, I don't think. So I do appreciate that. And I guess with that, we will close. Thank you very much for being here.
And thank you.
We will close the public hearing, and we will... Any other question, other business before the committee? Okay, we are adjourned.
Thank you.
Senator Winters?
Yes.
Did you submit...